sharing a few Rashis from Parsha Shmini, some Rashis I haven't spoken about in past years, Shiurim, some of the lesser-known Rashis in Parsha Shmini. But you may hear in the background a lot of background noise, because this is the first day the Beis Medrash, the Gush Beis Medrash, has been open without any walls, without any plastics, without any compartments. It's a very, very exciting day. So for so many people who have not been able to return to their shuls and not been able to return to their Beit HaMedrash, or have been able to return but under strict limiting conditions, just wanted to give you a taste of Baruch Hashem with HaKadosh Baruch Hu Siyata Deshmaya. At this point, at least, we've been allowed to return in full measure, full bevy. I'm looking forward to tomorrow night, Friday night, my favorite part of the week in Yeshiva. We have a Kalbach Kabbalah Shabbos every Shabbos in Yeshiva, and it ends up with one large, huge circle around the entire expanse of the Beit Medrash with people literally from all over the world dancing together to Mekabel Shabbos in the mountains of Hebron, in the mountains of Har Yehuda. So getting back to Parsha Shmini with all the Torah background noise, Moshe Rabbeinu tells Bnei Yisrael, list the various korbanos, the Sir Izim on this special day of inauguration, the Chatas, the Egel, the Keves, the Calf, and the Sheep, that are being brought as an ola, the various korbanos shlamim, an ox and a ram, a lot of korbanos, special day, mincha, some flour, balula bashemen, ki hayom Hashem nirah, Hashem is appearing to you today. This is the day of Gilui Shechina. The phraseology is a little bit atypical. Ki hayom Hashem nirah aleichem, ki hayom nirah Hashem aleichem. Rashi doesn't specify that it's the word Aleichem that tips him off, but I think it is that word. Rashi writes, Lashros Shchinaso b'maase yedechem, lekach korbanos halalu bayin chova liyom zeh. Very interesting, Rashi. There are two parts to Rashi. This is the day that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will reside or indwell his Shechina, his presence, b'maase yedechem, in the tent that human beings assembled. Therefore, korbanos are necessary. Those don't seem to be naturally connected. They don't seem to have a natural flow. What's the relationship between the korbanos and the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina is indwelling in this tent? I believe that Rashi is highlighting the following aspect, the following feature. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina had appeared before. This isn't the first moment of Mass Gilui Shechina. It was a Gilui Shechina in Mitzrayim, the night of Yitzias Mitzrayim, Mor Gadol, Zergilu Shechina. There's a Gilu Shechina 7 days later, Alayam, Zekir Levi and Veu, Vayar Yisrael Ziyad HaGdolah Asher Asa Hashem in Mitzrayim. Of course, there was Gilu Shechina at Har Sinai, the seminal moment of Gilu Shechina historically. There was even Gilu Shechina chronicled in the end of Pekudei, which may or may not have overlapped with the account described in Parshas Shemini. That may have been when Moshe completed construction. This is more the day of inauguration. There was plenty of Gilui Shechinas before. But this is the first Gilui Shechina that human beings are participating in, that human beings are eliciting, that human beings are drawing. This is where human beings are deciding the Olam Moed, the location of interface, the location of interaction. This is not just Ki Hayom Hashem Nir'al Lachem, that Hashem is appearing to you, the phraseology we would expect, but Ki Hayom Nira Hashem Aleichem. Aleichem doesn't just refer to the Jewish people as the objects upon which the Shechina is devolving, but there's a meeting. Aleichem El. There's two people. It's almost as if two people are meeting. Of course, Am Yisrael is engaging in that meeting because they build the Beis HaMikdash. So this is a pivotal moment in the history of religion where the Shechina descends not unilaterally, based on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decision of time and location, but the Shechina descends based on human input, human engineering, human decision. That's why korbanos are brought, A, to mark and to note the unique circumstances of this Gilui Shechina, but also because korbanos are one manner in which human beings draw the Shechina into our world. At Har Sinai, there were korbanos, but they seem to have been more celebratory korbanos post facto, after the event. After seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they celebrated with Korban Shlamim. Now there are korbanos that are meant to draw Hashem, to draw the proximity and the closeness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into our world, into our planet. So this is a first, and that's why Moshe is noting it, and that's why Moshe switches up the terminology from Ki Hayom Nir Hashem Aleichem, or Aleichem, or Aleichem with an ayin, Tikiyom Nir Hashem Alechem with an Aleph, as Rashi comments, Lahashros Shchinasa b'Maase Yadechem, not just to impose his Shchina, but to indwell his Shchina in a human container. Okay, next Rashi, Rashi Pasuk Tes, a Pasuk Zayin. Aaron's a little bit shy; he's a little bit uncomfortable. Moshe eases that comfort. Vayama Moshe el Aaron, Karavel HaMizbeach. What does Rashi say? Rashi quotes the Medrash that Aaron was Bosh V'Yarei Lageshes. Now, Yarei Lageshes describes any person, any individual will be Yarei Lageshes. To take that mantle, to take that responsibility, to stand in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, to perform korbanos, especially the first. Oh, he has to be the first person. Remember a couple of years ago, I had laser surgery on my eyes, and it was very uncomfortable. I mean, your eyes are a very, very delicate part of your body, a very crucial part of your body. All of a sudden, to clamp it open with these metal clamps and run a laser over them didn't give me a feeling of security and of comfort. But I said, you know, I'm not the first. People have done this before. There hasn't been any damages or injuries. So I went ahead with it with that confidence. But I was thinking to myself, imagine being the first person to undergo, the first person to land on the moon. It takes a lot of guts, takes a lot of courage. So Aaron's the first. But he's also Bosch. He's a little embarrassed. And of course he's embarrassed because his mind and his heart are flooded by memories and images of the Egel, much of which is being addressed on this day by the various korbanos. Certainly the calf korban, as Rashi says, is invoking the Egel Hazav that the Am Yisrael worships. So he's not just generally uncomfortable. He's a little shy. He's a little bit unwilling and hesitant. And in general, those are the types of leaders we need in life. Unfortunately, modern democracies have spawned a world of megalomania, in which leaders are the ones that have the biggest ego, willing to pay the steepest price for their climb to the top, willing to expose their own family and their own privacy just for power, just for authority, just for attention, willing to commit all sorts of moral transgressions and odious behavior towards others and conduct towards others, just to advance their own. The personality of the politics of personality has replaced the politics of ideas and the politics of values. Sadly, that's why we're saddled with so many people unfit to govern. And in general, it's a malaise of leadership in the modern world, where leadership has been translated to people that are the most aggressive, or the most assertive, or the most manipulative, or the most powerful, as we say, rather than trying to identify people who don't want to be leaders. They just want to be people, but they lead quietly. Today's Yom HaShoah, so I'm thinking a little bit about Rav Amital, my Rebbe, who was one of the greatest leaders that I've ever met. And he wasn't interested. His leadership wasn't loud, wasn't self-imposed, wasn't self-aggrandizing. So you see a portrait of Aaron. The fact that Aaron is shy, and Aaron doesn't really choose this. He's been chosen. He's thrust into the moment. The fact that he's chosen against his will, against his primary interests, he'd rather stay at home and have a quiet religious life, is the reason that Aaron is chosen, is the reason that Aaron is fit for the job, is part of the reason, at least, is fit for the job. Moshe's job is now to try to ease him out of that hesitance, ease him out of that wariness. Amalo Moshe. So we don't hear what Moshe says in the Pasuk. We just hear Moshe saying, Krav al Mizbeach, barking, as it were, at Aaron. Move closer to the Mizbeach. But Rashi softens Moshe's statement. He's not just instructing Aaron about it, approaching the Mizbeach. He says, Amalo Moshe, lama ta bosh. Why are you ashamed? Why are you embarrassed? Why are you uncomfortable? Lekach nivcharta. You were chosen for this. Lekach nivcharta. So I think in that phrase that Moshe says, Lekach nivcharta, lies two different messages. One is the message I just said, Lekach nivcharta, it's reflexive. You were chosen precisely because you're uncomfortable, because you're not the Korach type of leader who thirsts for power and thirsts for ego and thirsts for attention and thirsts to be in the spotlight. Because you didn't mind in Mitzrayim playing second fiddle, taking a back seat, because you didn't mind stepping aside, because of that role, because of those personality traits, you are the consummate leader. You are the ideal leader. Lekach nivcharta. So lama tabosh, lekach nivcharta means you're chosen because of your shyness, because of your healthy personality. That's not the simple pshat in Rashi, obviously. The simple pshat in Rashi is Moshe is not describing the reason for Aaron's selection because he's so shy and because he's so wary. He's saying, you have a function in life. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you a function in life. And that function sometimes has to demand a character shift, or at least playing certain roles you may not be comfortable with. And that's also a sign of leadership, that you don't only migrate towards the functions and the callings that you would feel naturally drawn to, but you have a sense of urgency and historical expediency and historical necessity, and you realize, well, what is my generation need for me? What does history need for me? And I think people of deep historical consciousness and people for whom historical consciousness is part of religious consciousness have to think in those terms when they make major decisions in life, particularly what profession to choose, particularly where to live. So often in this me generation of individual interest and individual need, individual preference, we think about what career, what place do I want to live in, rather than saying, well, what does history need me in? What function does Hashem expect of me? It's not always easy to decipher that, but to introduce an entirely different language into the mechanics of arriving at a decision. So Moshe tells Aaron, I know that you'd probably prefer to be less in the limelight, to be more hidden and obscured, but l'kach nivcharti, you've been chosen by Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he says, step up and play the role that you've been chosen for. In this case, the role is pretty obvious because it's telegraphed by Moshe through prophecy. Another Rashi, or another series of Rashis, a little bit later on, there is a disruption, there's a rupture in the day. Unfortunately, tragically, Aaron's two sons die. And then in the aftermath, Moshe realizes that of the various korbanos which were offered, some were the standard korbanos, for example, was Rosh Chodesh, just according to Rashi. Some were unique korbanos to herald the inauguration and the induction of the Mishkan. But those korbanos, some of them were meant to be eaten, because they were korban chatas. And the seer of Rosh Chodesh was a regular korban chatas and meant to be eaten. Yet it wasn't eaten, it was burnt. And Moshe is inquiring, and he's censuring, he's reprimanding Aaron during a very difficult and emotionally sensitive moment. And it takes Moshe a long time to ask the question. Ve'es seira chatas derosh derash Moshe v'nei saraf. There's an animal that should have been eaten, and yet its meat was burnt. And he asks Aaron, "Madua lo achaltem es achatas b'makom hakodesh?" Now, why is he asking in this manner? He should have been asking, "Why was it burnt?" And he asks in a very indirect fashion, "Why did you eat the chatas b'makom hakodesh?" He should have said, "Why did you eat it?" Or "Why was it burnt?" Or "Was it inverted?" Ki kodesh kodeshim hi v'yosan asan lechem lasei savon ha'ida, and you should have eaten it as part of the ceremonious expectations or mandates, or instructions of the korban. So Rashi, both in this pasuk, in which Moshe lodges his first question, and the subsequent phrases, Rashi says that when Moshe censures Aaron, reprimands Aaron, he doesn't say it frontally. He doesn't say, you shouldn't have burnt it, why did you burn it? He doesn't ask this. He rather suggests, well, did you not eat it for this reason? Did you not eat it for this reason? Did you not eat it for this reason? So, for example, Rashi says that Moshe says, maybe you didn't eat it because the meat was illegally taken out of the precincts of the Mishkan. And chatas meat that is taken outside of the kloyim, outside of the outer courtyard of the Mishkan, that chatas meat has to be redirected and burnt rather than eaten. That's called the psul yotze. And Rashi stresses this twice in his conversation. And then Moshe says, "Hein lo huva es dama al kodesh pinima." You haven't brought the blood into the internal areas of the mikdash. Namely, had it been that type of karban, a karban that's called a chatas pinimis, whose blood is sprinkled on the inner altar, well, that those types of chatos, you may have been legitimate in burning. Or if a regular korban chatas had been illegally brought inside, then that redirection would have disqualified the korban chatas. So Moshe is offering all sorts of halachic scenarios that may have accounted for and justified burning a korban that should have otherwise been eaten. All sorts of flaws and misdirections. Maybe you took it too far out. Maybe you took it too far in. Maybe the meat didn't remain b'makom hakodesh. Maybe the blood was brought as dama kodesh pinima. Maybe you're instead of directly critiquing them, instead of directly questioning Aaron, who's suffering, heroically suffering, as he's watched his two children tragically die, Moshe offers all these options. Says, well, maybe this is the reason. Maybe that is the reason. In fact, there's something which Moshe doesn't say, but we hear it through Aaron's response. Aaron says, "Vaydaber Aaron al Moshe." Next pasuk, you test. Hein hayom mikrivis chatasam misal l'sam afei Hashem etakrenosi ka'ela. And Aaron refers to the death of his sons, and Rashi says, well, he's also responding to another option that Moshe gave. Moshe gave him another option. Well, maybe the reason you burnt the meat was because your children had just lost their brother, and they have the halachic status of an onein, and a kohen is an onein, can't sprinkle the blood. And Aaron says, no, that's not the reason, because I sprinkled the blood. I'm a kohen gadol, and a kohen gadol doesn't have that disqualification when he just lost a family member. He should still continue the avodah. So basically, it sounds like Moshe gave Aaron several options. He didn't just challenge Aaron, why was the meat burnt? He says, well, maybe the meat was illegally transported outside of the Mishkan. Maybe the blood was inappropriately advanced too close into the inner sanctum of the Mishkan. Maybe it's because an onein, someone who had the halachic status of disqualified from avodah, participated in the avodah because he lost the brother, and a kohen gadol who's an onein has to continue the avodah, but a regular kohen should not. And Aaron says, no, it's not any of those options. And then he explains the real reason, and Moshe concedes. Sometimes it's easier when we critique someone to soft pedal it, to be more gingerly. There are many ways to be ginger about it. It's tonality, it's body gesture, it's timing, it's context. You just blurt it out and say it in the context of a larger conversation. How you say it, do you ask a question, are you respectful, eye language, body language. Sometimes when we reprimand or we critique someone, it's easier to say it as a question. Was it for this reason? Was it for that reason? It conveys sincerity. It conveys respect. It conveys recognition that there may be answers and information that you may not be aware of that lies behind the decision that you disagree with. It conveys subtlety and nuance. It's not only a way to view it and to look at it. And Moshe, throughout his history, lessons us about delivering critique and delivering criticism. We've seen Moshe in the beginning of Sefer Devarim, very famous Unkelus, very famous Targum Unkelus, about how Moshe criticizes the Jewish people for their betrayals in the desert. But either way, this is another example where Moshe doesn't just, and he's especially sensitive to Aaron, who must be living through a nightmare, he doesn't say, why was the meat burnt? He says, well, maybe the meat was burnt because it was illegally transported. Or maybe the meat was burnt because the blood was brought too close into the Mishkan. Or maybe the meat was burnt. Moshe doesn't say this, but we hear in Aaron's response that Moshe actually says this. It's not recorded or documented in the Pesukim. Maybe the meat was burnt because an onein who shouldn't have performed an avodah was involved in the avodah. And Aaron says, no, it's not this and it's not that. And Aaron's honest and he fesses up and he delivers the information to Moshe Rabbeinu. And of course, Moshe's second act of heroism and sensitivity is that he listens, he concedes, Vayita Be'inav. Rashi says, Ho devilo bosh lama lo shemati. Moshe isn't embarrassed to say, I don't know. The hallmark of a teacher is the ability to say, you don't know. I heard this from Rav Amital, quoting Rav Shach, with whom he taught with in Yeshivas HaDarom many years before he formed Yeshivat Har Tzion. The most important answer a teacher, and for that matter a parent, can give a child to say, you don't know, is to teach your students and children the ability to confess limited knowledge, not to be omnipotent or omniscient. Omniscient, not omnipotent. Shabbat Shalom.